Hey everyone, welcome to Comedy History 101. This is Harmon. Today, this very day, marks the start of a trilogy. Yes, a three-part episode on the late, great John Belushi. Yes, a comedian so nice, we episode him three times. But there's so much to go into about John Belushi, who was hands down, not only one of the greatest sketch performers of all time, but maybe the greatest sketch performer of all time. And we're going to go into this episode. We're going to start with the John Belushi origin story, kind of how he came up into Second City and what he did just right directly before being cast on Saturday Night Live and changing the face of comedy. But before we jump into the episode, take some time to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101 wherever you get your podcasts or on our site, comedyhistory101.com. Also, take time to support Comedy History 101. In this ever-changing podcast world, we're an independently produced show, so that means no ads, and we want to keep it ad-free. So check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/CH101 and throw in a few bucks. Keep us ad-free. No ads about Casper mattresses. And without further ado,
good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Yeah, sure, I'm an anarchist. I'd rather be an anarchist than a professional.
On his 30th birthday, the Blues Brothers were number one. He was on the number one television show. And Animal House was the number one grossing comedy.
Oh, so what you heard up front was part of the trailer of the new Showtime documentary on the late, great John Belushi. And yes, you've tuned into another episode of
Comedy History 101.
Where what? We school you in what? Comedy. I am Harmon Leon. With me, of course, Scott Klonico. Scott, how are you?
Harmon, I hope you can hear me because, you know what? As of today, I'm officially thin.
You're officially Finnish?
I'm within the approved BMI, which to tie that into our current episode, John Belushi wasn't towards the end of his life. At the beginning, he is a rather trim in some of these clips we'll be talking about.
Oh, I see. Okay, you're talking about sort of his weight mass?
Yes, I'm talking about my weight mass as well, yeah.
Oh, right. Are you trim or not trim?
I would say I'm trim. Now, like I said, I'm officially trim as of today. I am in my required, recommended BMI weight mass for being the right way.
Yeah, there's two ways that people are going with the pandemic. Some are just letting themselves go to hell, yeah. And then others are just fitness fanatics. But I think we digress a little bit. Scott, when you hear the name John Belushi, what comes to mind?
Saturday Night Live, the samurai, who we don't know. We'll have to do a whole episode on that. I don't know if that's politically correct or not anymore. And, of course, Animal House.
Oh, yeah? What about something about a pair of siblings from Joliet that were into
Joliet,
the blues?
You mean the Blues Brothers?
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah. So this is part one of a three-parter we're doing on John Belushi. Today we are going to cover sort of the John Belushi origin story up until his time on Saturday Night Live. And as you've seen in the new Showtime documentary, where did a young John Adams Belushi, who was born January 24th, 1949, and of course was one of the original seven cast members of Saturday Night Live, where did he touch down on the planet and get his start? Where did the John Belushi origin story begin?
He began in Chicago, Harmon, born to Albanian-American parents. He's actually one of our one of the most famous Albanian-Americans we have.
He is. To be more precise, it was a suburb called Wheaton, Illinois, which is Chicago.
You can say it was called that.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so like you said, he was born to Albanian-American parents. His dad, a restaurateur who later on in Saturday Night Live, the classic cheeseburger bit, was based on Belushi's dad.
Ah, wow, okay, yeah.
Yep, and his mother, Agnes, was a pharmacy worker, and he had three siblings, his sister, Marion, and younger brothers, Billy, who I did a Google search and tried to find out more. And, of course, who was the other brother, Scott?
That was all I see is our note here that currently he is now a cannabis farmer. But you're talking about Jim Belushi.
Yeah, Jim Belushi, who followed his older brother into show business. I believe when John was a senior in high school, Jim was in eighth grade. From an interview I saw at the time. And just a footnote on Jim Belushi, I somehow got into a James Caan movie rabbit hole and watched the 1981 movie Thief, which was Michael Mann's, I believe, his first movie.
Right, yeah.
And it co-starred Jim Belushi in a dramatic role.
Really? Well, we've talked about this before because he was in a Jim Belushi was in a bunch of those like sitcoms that went nowhere in the early 80s. Like you can find
Working Stiffs with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, he was in that one with Michael Keaton. There was some other one, and yeah, I go. Speaking of rabbit holes, I'll go down into the when people make compilation tapes of the TV show intros from certain years. Mm-hmm. So I'll just watch those. Yeah,
yeah, those are great. Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
But again, I think Jim Belushi is a whole other episode in itself.
That's a whole other episode to the whole Jim Belushi phenomenon.
Yeah, but he ties in because he was also part of an Albanian family who was Eastern Orthodox Christian and attended the Albanian Orthodox Church, I guess, in Wheaton, Illinois. So John early on was kind of like the perfect all-American kid. What was he like in high school?
Well, like you said, Harmon, he was the all-American kid. How much more all-American can you get than being the co-captain of the Wheaton Central High School football team and being elected homecoming king?
Exactly. And not only that, but he also had a band, which is kind of funny. He played the drums. Yeah,
this is pretty awesome.
Yeah, the band, the Ravens. And what was their signal? They're this one signal they had has like
They had a split. So they had a split. Actually, sorry, I read a little bit about this. So apparently they scraped together a bunch of money, or not a bunch of money. They scraped up some money, went into Chicago, and recorded like a split single. On one side of it was kind of like their own song called Listen to Me. And then, but the flip side was a song called The Jolly Green Giant, which is kind of a 1960s kind of anthem song, which here's the odd connection. That song, Jolly Green Giant, was originally done by the Kingsmen.
Oh, wow.
Who would later would also do Louie Louie, which featured, you know, prominently in Animal House.
It's gonna be different now because I found another girl. Just like you, and we'll be happy together forever and ever. If I can only get you out of my mind, what could have went wrong with our love? We could have made it, you and I. I don't know what to do since you've gone. I miss the tenderness of your arm. Please come back to me, come back to me.
What? You're blowing my mind.
Yeah. I just came up with that on the spot. I just realized that.
Oh, well, I thought they were Jolly Green Giant was a cover for the Ravens.
Yeah, it was a cover. It was kind of a famous, like a lot of people did that apparently. It was a famous 1960s kind of song.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that was like one of their originals. But on the song, not only did Belushi play drums, but he also sang some vocals. Like, I think there's like a spoken word kind of part.
Yeah, there's a spoken word part, yeah. And if you see the video, which we'll post on our webpage at comedyhistory101.com. If you see the video, there's actually, they have a image in the YouTube video. They have an image of the single, which is cool. And then they also have a single of an image of the album cover, which features Belushi on it. And then oddly enough, one of his bandmates was another, I guess, Albanian guy. Mm-hmm. His name was also Belushi, but
really?
Spelled in a weird Albanian way. Yeah, it was like his other bandmate was like, it was like B-E-L-U-S-C-H-I or something like that.
Wow. So they're part of the Albanian rock explosion.
Yeah, and apparently, so Albania, if we just go off into the history a little bit, the dictator, because Albania was under a dictatorship during the Cold War, and apparently that guy was super crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever the guy, I can't remember the guy's name, he was running Albania, but it was like this super mini little East Germany in the middle of Yugoslavia.
Yeah, so not only did he have the band The Ravens in high school with a fellow Albanian, but also in high school, that's where he met his future wife, Judith Jacqueline, who we will talk about her role in John's career later on in this episode. But also in high school, that's where he developed his interest in acting and appeared in high school variety shows. And encouraged by his drama teacher, John put aside his plans to, and this is like, you know, again, in parallel universe, this could have happened. He put away his plans to become a football coach and pursue the career of acting.
That would have been good to see a John Belushi football coach.
Well, you almost could see that, like on the sidelines, throwing a chair.
One of the funny things that, like, in the seasons of SNL where Jim Belushi was on it, and they did like a film skit where Jim Belushi was playing a chess team coach.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like a chess team coach a la Bobby Knight, where you're talking about throwing chairs and stuff.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
It's like the one guy makes the move and Jim Belushi gets all mad and he throws a chair and he's like, why don't you just give him the king? It's that one's pretty good, I gotta admit.
Give
Jim Belushi credit where credit is due. Yeah.
Yeah, and very fitting to the very popular Netflix show Queen's Gambit, which has brought chess back into the coolest sphere, if that's such a thing.
I believe it is. I'll go with it.
Yeah, so upon graduating high school in 1967, John went off to rural Indiana where he performed summer stock. So I guess in the documentary, I think he was like doing the shows at night and to make extra money. I think he was like painting like the buildings in the theater buildings in rural Indiana when he was performing in summer stock. So the fall of his freshman year, he went off to the University of Wisconsin at Whitewater. That's like crazy small town, Wisconsin. And there, Scott, he became, what did he become? Edgy.
He became the bad boy, man.
Yeah, so he changes, like, and again, if you see the picture of him on the album cover of The Ravens, he has like, you know, short hair, wearing button-down shirts, but it was like at Whitewater is when he started growing his hair long. I think all through high school, as you saw in the documentary, he rode a motorcycle, but that was sort of the inspiration in Animal House of D-Day driving his motorcycle up the stairs was Belushi in his University of Wisconsin Whitewater days.
D-Day, who was supposed to be played by Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, who, as we'll see later in this episode, we met in 1974.
All right, well, we're not there yet.
So what happened after he dropped out of Wisconsin Whitewater?
Well, Harmon, John spent the next couple of years at the College of DuPage. Is that, you're from up there? Is that how you say
it? I would say, because we're Americans, we wouldn't call it DuPage. I think it would be, it's much like in Minnesota, they have New Prague, but everyone calls it New Prague. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So anything that is like based on like an old world type name is spelled how it appears. So I would say it would be DuPage.
He was up there eating his cheese curds. His cheese curds and DuPage, which is a junior college a few miles from his parents' Wheaton home. So kind of guess they're on the border between Wisconsin and Illinois, and where his father began trying to get him to come and work where? At the restaurant.
At the cheeseburger place. So again, parallel universes, if, you know, a few little factors would have gone askew, you know, Belushi would have ended up being a, you know, successful restaurateur.
Yeah, it would have been nice. Had a good hamburger from John Belushi.
Yeah, but also in the documentary, his mom was very funny. His biggest influence was his grandma, who could, I don't even think she could speak English, or she could barely speak English. But his dad was very serious and wouldn't laugh at anything Belushi would do.
Well, we can live in an alternate universe, Harmon, for just a second.
Sure.
And that, you know, and you've been there, across Europe, there's a series of restaurants and bars called Belushi's, which you performed at.
One
you performed in the
Berlin.
Basement there. Yeah, there's one in there. Actually, they're a chain, which you wonder how, you know, trademarky that might be, how much of a problem that might be. But anyway. There it is. You can pretend like Jim Belushi opened a successful chain of restaurants with his team.
You've been to the Belushi's restaurant in Berlin. On the inside, do they have photos of John Belushi? Do they go that route? Or is it just sort of like an Applebee's?
It's kind of more, I think it's more just Americana.
Ah. So there would be a John Belushi picture, say in Blues Brothers garb, but it's only to emphasize Americana.
There might be one. I can't. I can neither confirm nor deny the existence of such a photo.
Especially at this time when it's probably in lockdown.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So while at the College of DuPage, we'll go with that unless we get a letter from a listener telling us otherwise, which you can comment on comedyhistory101.com or wherever you get your podcasts. While there, he formed a comedy improv sketch group called the West Compass Players.
Yeah, another improv comedy troupe, you know, which, you know, back then that was improv was still kind of edgy-ish, you know. Not too many people were doing improv.
Yeah, but they modeled it over the model of Second City, the Second City style of improv. And they must have been, well, obviously they must have been darn good, you know. I assume at the time, like, Belushi was probably about 20 years old, 21 years old, when he was in the West Compass Players. And because they became pretty successful. So in 1971, Belushi made the leap to Second City after being discovered by, I'm probably going to butcher his name, Bernard Salins, who is the founder of Second City.
Yeah, he kind of, I remember him. I remember his name because I think he produced a lot of the TV show stuff too.
Yeah, so here's the thing with Belushi. Normally the progression at Second City was you would start off in the touring company and you would tour, but you would play Monday nights at the main stage. But Belushi went right to the main stage, which was unheard of at the time.
It was good. He must impress people. Must impress Bernie.
Yeah, and so as we talked about on our history of Abbie Hoffman and the Second City, the first really kind of edgy performer to start at Second City was none other than Ghostbuster favorite who, Scott?
Well, that would be Harold Ramis.
Yes. Harold Ramis was like, he was like one of the guys who really changed the face of Second City. Like before, it was kind of like, you know, especially in the late 60s, Second City became a little bit square, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. People were in ties trying to do, you know, cocktail party jokes.
Yeah, jokes about like kind of like the dentist office sketch or, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Kind of like that. So when Harold Ramis came, he was in the Monday night sort of show, which prided themselves on having long-haired players and doing the edgy jokes. And Ramis said, I used to play like hippies and counterculture guys, but when, you know, John Belushi came in, he took over those roles because he really was counterculture. And so Harold Ramis moved to what he says the coward roles.
Yeah, we talked about that in that episode about about Second City, the coward role and like the scientist role,
yeah,
which is really interesting because I rewatched Ghostbusters for the first time in a long
great movie
about a month ago. Yeah, and it's interesting seeing Ramis in there. You're like, okay.
Yeah, and then another tie to Belushi was he was supposed to play the Ernie Hudson role.
Yeah, and Slimer is modeled after Belushi more or less, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And going back to just something that made me laugh in our episode about Abbie Hoffman in Second City was when Belushi came in, one of Harold Ramis's popular characters was a character called Specs.
Yeah, right,
yeah. I guess because Harold Ramis wore glasses.
Yeah, he wore Specs, dude.
So besides Harold Ramis, who else did Belushi perform with at Second City during that era?
Well, Bill Murray, Brian Doyle Murray, two Murray brothers. And then it's also interesting, Joe Flaherty, which also went on to be on the SCTV TV program. There's a clip of it floating around YouTube where he's doing a skit. It's kind of like a This Is Your Life skit. And Belushi is playing a... kind of like a Central American guerrilla fighter.
All right. And so, Jesus, on trial for conspiracy and indeed the darkest moment in your lifetime.
I'll swear away.
These voices were to come to your aid.
If you plead guilty, you'll get 2 years probation.
That's the first year you're a law student that they gave me. Mm-hmm.
We find the defendant guilty.
That's the foreman, the all-white jury.
That's right. 40 years, God later.
Oh, that's the all-white judge. I don't have voice any place.
And this voice.
All right, come with me.
Well, I
don't
see it.
Hmm?
Know that voice.
You should. That's the guard that's come to take you away. Jesus Rodriguez, pile of poverty, man of anger, this was your wife.
But it's funny. That's got a lot of personal. That's got Bill Murray. No, not Bill Murray. It's got Flaherty comes out and he makes an appearance in there. And then Ramis makes an appearance
as a junkie.
As a junkie, yeah. And then one of the comments said one of the other guys who comes out was the guy who went on it, that TV show from the 80s, Sledgehammer. I don't know if you remember that one, but
I think
that
Max
was the actor,
Headroom.
The other actor.
Yeah.
No, Sledgehammer.
Yeah, I did do an IMDb a dive into one of the performers in that, and he had like his page since the 70s was just filled with, you know, non-stop working, though, you know, by no means a household name.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, no, Max Headroom was, what's his name, Matt Brewer or something? Anyway, that's a whole other episode.
Yeah, so, but again, it's like Belushi at the time was like 21, 20 years 22 years old, and he's performing six nights a week, perfecting, you know, his physical gonzo style of comedy, which, you know, later made him famous. In fact, word was already getting out about Belushi. So in 1972, when National Lampoon was putting together their first stage show called Lemmings, it might have been Chevy Chase maybe Christopher Guest, but they said, you got to go check out this guy Belushi in Chicago. And they, you know, obviously they saw Belushi and Belushi was Belushi. And so he was offered the role in the 1972 off-Broadway stage production of National Lampoon Lemmings, which also featured a young, well, obviously a young Chevy Chase, because it's 1972, it wouldn't be current day Chevy Chase in the production. And Christopher Guest.
Yeah, and also, like, I think Paul Schaefer is buried in there somewhere, and there's a lot of alumni who came out of that show.
Yeah, if people want to find out, you know, maybe a deeper dive into National Lampoon Lemmings, is there anywhere, any podcasts that cover that?
Well, they might want to check out ComedyHistory101.com or some of our back episodes, which you can find on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, so we did a deep dive into the history of Lemmings. And again, so Belushi and his wife, Jacqueline, they moved from Chicago to New York. The premise of the show, which opened at the Village Gate on January 25th, 1973, And also ran amazing 350 performances, It was sort of a mockumentary of the rock festival Woodstock.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of a brilliant premise, because it's like they can just perform to the audience and address the audience, and they're not trying to put on, and then they can do sketches in the middle of it. And so it's just a good all wraparound kind of hip, I want to say hip and hippie thing. You can see how that could work. And if you watch clips, there's plenty of clips of those on YouTube when you can see them, especially Belushi doing his Joe Cocker.
Well, I'm standing here, we're singing my song. Well, there ain't nothing to do, and all my brains are gone. I had sunshine out of country home. I've been on the cover of Rolling Stone, but it's lonely.
Yes, it's lonely.
Yes,
yeah, so again, they called it the mock rock festival is called Woodshuck, 3 days of peace, love, Woodshuck. And death. And Belushi, again, it was like, it's such an easy structure of the show. It's like Belushi's the MC, and then they bring up sort of like, you know, satirical musical acts, and Belushi mm-hmm. would be the thread and give advice to the audience, such as Kill Yourself. Again, total satire of the peace and love generation, you know, which, you know, also was like the thesis of National Lampoon magazine, growing out of kind of being tired of the hippie movement.
Yeah, and Christopher Guest does a great
James Taylor.
It's pretty good. It's pretty spot on, actually.
Yeah, also and so Chevy Chase, just a digression, was coming out of the Channel One Theater, which is the theater. I know exactly where that theater is on 4th Street in Lower East Side, where he developed with Richard Belzer a movie that later went on to be The Groove Tube. And Richard Belzer is about to come back into the story, so that's why I bring up that point. So, again, the show was co-directed by Sean Kelly, Tony Hendra, and Michael Keaty. They all came out of National Lampoon, and uncredited was Doug Kenny. What do you know about Doug Kenny?
Oh, he might have had a little something to do with National Lampoon.
Kind of guy also, wrote my favorite. Caddyshack too.
Yeah, but my favorite, he appears in Animal House himself as a stork. Kind of my favorite.
What the hell are we going to do, you moron?
Yeah,
I think that's his only line in the movie.
What do you want to do, you moron?
Yeah.
Just kind of an update on this, just because I thought it was a myth and I didn't want to say anything, but I have double-checked. But yeah, the whole thing about lemmings killing themselves, which is what the whole lemming show is about, mm-hmm. That is patently not true.
Oh my God!
Lemmings do not. Did you hear the thing? So the basically when it a lot of it comes out of this film that Walt Disney put out in 1958,
right?
And basically they were shooting all these because lemmings will, if there's a big population boom, they'll they'll try to go somewhere else. They'll try to locate like a new colony, and yeah, they can swim. So they'll jump into the water and swim, whatever. But apparently, when they're filming this one nature documentary at Disney, they with the helicopter, and the helicopter scared them, and all these lemons kind of jumped off a cliff. And then they just said, yep, this is what they do.
Wow, so we have Disney to blame for, you know, tarnishing the images of lemmings.
Yeah, and where they took the name for this show. So there, it does connect.
Ah, it connects indeed. So the premise of the show is almost...
Did that blow your mind, dude?
That's the first time I heard that. My mind is blown.
Really? Oh, yeah. So it's crazy.
Note this jumping back in point. Speaking of blowing people's minds, Belushi as Joe Cocker blew people's minds in the production of Lemmings. So much so that Rob Reiner, who was in the audience, saw Belushi performing his Joe Cocker bit, and when he was one of the I think George Carlin was the first host of Saturday Night Live.
George Carlin was the first, yeah.
Yeah, so Rob Reiner was, you know, he was one of the early hosts of Saturday Night Live. So when he hosted Saturday Night Live, he requested that Belushi reprise his Joe Cocker bit, which he first performed in Lemmings.
It is, and it is a funny bit, especially if you've seen it. Yeah, it's good.
It steals the show, especially when he like falls on his stomach.
He's rolling around on the stomach.
Yeah, and then he like falls on, then he's like a turtle, and then he grips the microphone and works with it, and then without missing a beat, they just kick right back into the song. Just like crazy perfect timing. So the success of Lemmings caused National Lampoon's, you know, circulation to jump. You know, so much so that, you know, the performers, Chevy Chase and Belushi, who hands down stole the show, went to Marty Simmons, the magazine publisher, and asked for a raise. And did they get the raise, Scott?
Well, first of all, Harmon, they went to Maddie Simmons.
Yeah.
Not Marty, which I think you might have said.
Okay, good catch.
But they were turned down. They were turned down.
Because he said performers are...
a dime a dozen.
And those performers were John Belushi, Chevy Chase, and Christopher Guest.
Yep. Who are now kind of pretty big stars.
Yeah, except everyone's hating on the Chevy Chase. I think he's just so bitter.
Yeah, but it's weird because they gave him a chance. We'll do an episode on... did you watch Community a lot?
I just here and there, you know? It's just another one of those kind of UK office type shows.
It's a little different. It's more kind of in the hipster, like, you know, it's a guy, you know, this guy does Rick and Morty. So this is a show he did before.
Yeah, Dan Harmon.
A lot of movie references in there. Yeah. So the first couple episodes, I would say, were pretty top notch.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of resurrect Chevy Chase.
They did. Yeah.
To tie it in.
Backstage stuff, he was a pain to work with.
Yeah, but you watch the show and you see Chevy, you go, okay, you're pretty funny, and you can see why, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Chevy, like, good. You know, you could probably see the whole Lemming show online on YouTube. You know, he was great back in the
day. You can, yeah.
And we'll get more into that next episode, because there was great animosity between Belushi and Chevy, who in the first season stole Saturday Night Live, and everyone just thought it was the Chevy Chase show. But we'll get more into that.
He stole enough to leave after a year, yeah.
So anyways, the success of Lemmings led to another off-Broadway show called The National Lampoon Show, which also starred John Belushi and, again, other greats. Gilda Radner was brought in, Bill Murray, again, mainstay Harold Ramis from Belushi's Second City days, Brian Doyle Murray, who played Gerald Ford, by the way.
Okay, rehearsal of warm-up. Let's do 20 face slaps. Come on. Slap it out. Come on. Make it hurt. No pain, no gain. Come on. Make it hurt. Good.
Yeah,
good.
So again, that was at the New Palladium Club on West 51st Street. This show was a little more political in theme. It was, again, all about the Watergate era and white-collar criminals who were forced to live like kings. And of course, you get Gilda Radner playing Patty Hearst.
Nice touch.
But through it, you know, all the reviews just said things like the funniest actor is John Belushi, the only original repeater from Lemmings with a bear-like presence and malleable bark of a voice. He does a quick impersonations of Truman Capote and Marlon Brando. The show ended with Belushi shouting into a megaphone, "The whole audience is under arrest."
Mm-hmm.
The success of those two stage shows, what trajectory course did that lead Belushi?
Well, Harmon, I kind of had a little spontaneous thought about this. What happened next was the National Lampoon Radio Hour, and for those of you, those listeners of us who don't know, you know, why would people listen to the radio? What was going on? Basically, this is the National Lampoon podcast back in the day. They would
good
play,
point.
They would
good
kind
point.
Of, thank you. Thank you. I was trying to be contemporary for the kids. They would kind of pre-record up in New York City. They had like a studio built in the National Lampoon offices, and then they would, like, you know, it would be broadcast on, you know, all, you know, alternative rock. No, that, sorry, they didn't have alternative rock back then, but, like, you know, rock stations and whatnot throughout the country. You know, usually probably pretty late at night.
And what type of humor was it?
Well, Harmon,
the
edgy, I don't want to, you know,
humor.
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but yeah, it was edgy.
Yeah, so Belushi, not only was he a writer and actor on the show, but he actually ended up being the director after a Michael O'Donohue. Could you fill the listeners in who Michael O'Donohue is?
Well, he was one of the original writers on National Lampoon. He was one of the more famous ones. He came up with a lot of when they had their Vietnam baby issue. He kind of came up with a lot of the material in that particular issue that was kind of infamous. But he was kind of known for his, like, really kind of twisted, dark sense of humor, and just kind of a brilliant genius.
Yeah, who also ended up on Saturday Night Live, not as a regular cast member, but he was a writer, but he would appear in such sketches as, I don't know if this was the name, but like Tony Orlando and Don sticking sharp needles in their eyes.
Yeah, he was a big sticking sharp needles in his eye. But also, here's a trivia for you, Harmon. He is in the first sketch that was on Saturday Night Live. It's him and Belushi.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but he left the show, and Belushi took over as director, and his wife Jacqueline became an associate producer of the show. And in fact, Belushi and Jacqueline were married on December 31st. Oh, I guess that's New Year's Eve. It is New Year's Eve, 1976.
Yeah. Yeah, and just to confirm, yeah, so they had a studio especially built in the National Lampoon offices, and the show was broadcast nationally on 600 different radio stations. So it was a big deal, and I remember that was a little bit before my time, but it was a big deal. People would, you know, listen to the National Lampoon Radio Hour.
Oh, yeah, and so tying back into the Channel 1 theater, not only was Chevy Chase also a performer on it, but also Richard Belzer.
Yeah, there's actually there's a couple clips. There's one actually that was pretty funny from the Radio Hour in 1973, where Richard Belzer and Belushi are doing Baby Marlon Brando, and they basically they're doing scenes from On the Waterfront, but they sped their voices up, and they're talking about baby contests instead of fighting. So it's kind of funny.
Mommy. Ma. Hey, mommy.
Go, go, go,
hey.
Go, 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 go. Listen, my brother, the grapevine says you're going to throw a tantrum.
Well, I don't know, Charlie.
Look, kid, it's about time you got off your knees and started standing on your own 2 feet.
I figured I'd crawl around a little bit longer, you know?
Listen, Terry, how much do you weigh? You know when you weigh 10 pounds, 4 ounces, you were beautiful? You could have been another Mason Reese. Any top kid star, you could have been up there. If it wasn't for that skunk we got you for a stage mother, she weaned you too fast.
Oh, Charlie, it wasn't her. It was you, Charlie. Don't you remember that night at a baby contest? You came down to my crib and you said, "Kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the prize on Tatum O'Neal." Remember? This ain't my night. My night! I could have taken O'Neal apart. So what happens? She gets an Oscar and I get a one-way ticket to Pottyville.
And another pretty funny clip from the Radio Hour is Belushi, and I'm pretty sure it's Guest, Christopher Guest, as the guru. I can't confirm that, but it sounds like him doing his Indian impression. But it's Belushi. He's a new guru by the name of who just a normal American guy called Craig Baker. So the Indian guy is asking him questions. So it's pretty funny about his guru-ness. And the interesting thing is they make a smoothie joke. And this is in 1973, so I didn't know smoothies existed back then.
Going back to Ghostbusters, one of my favorite podcasts, and they're not sponsoring the show, so I'm just plugging them anyways, is the Bowery Boys, which is History of New York. They did an episode on Ghostbusters, and they pointed out, like, the Rick Moranis character, you know, they want to make him so freaky.
Right.
Because he's into health food and juicing.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Which, smash cut 2020, we're all into health food and juicing.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
So he was ahead of his time, the Rick Moranis character in Ghostbusters, which, as we pointed out, should have also had John Belushi in it.
Actually, no, and the Rick Moranis, that character is actually supposed to be played by John Candy.
Oh, wow. Okay, that would have been a different take. Oh, we got to do an episode on that.
Oh, definitely.
What happened there that John Candy didn't end up doing?
I don't know. I mean, John Candy, so 84, so that was like when Splash came out. Uh-huh. So he was that's when, like, he'd already been on SCTV, the TV show, for a couple years. So 84 is when Splash came out. So he might have been, I don't know, maybe he had some other kind of role come up or something.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's a iconic Rick Moranis role. And he was perfect in that.
Oh, he's great.
You know, obviously, the National Lampoon Radio Hour didn't go on forever. The show folded. So what does that mean, Scott? Were the performers and writers out of work? What, do they just go, okay, that's it for us in show business?
No, well, you see, Harmon, it's interesting here. So what happened is that the National Lampoon cast and crew and show started getting poached by a producer who was starting a new show in New York by the name of Lorne Michaels, and he was coming up with a concept about live comedy and music on late at night that would be called Saturday Night Live.
Bum, bum, bum.
Actually, I think at first it was just called Saturday Night. But yeah, so basically a lot of the National Lampoon performers started getting poached, being hired by Lorne Michaels and Saturday Night Live and NBC. And of course, money's going to be bigger, better, and people start going over there.
Yeah, and that is a good jumping off point for this episode. And next episode, we'll get more into the Belushi Saturday Night Live era and... I kind of know the origin story of Saturday. It was originally Saturday Night with Howard Cosell.
Yeah. That's why they had to.
Yeah, they were the primetime players. And so their ironic nod was the not ready for primetime players.
Harmon. So those guys all wound up going over to Saturday Night Live. And what is interesting, which is cool, and which you can also see over at our website at comedyhistory101.com, is they save for history the SNL audition tape. So we actually have the audition tape of John Belushi that you can see. It's on YouTube. Like I said, it'll be on our website. And it's kind of interesting because he kind of does his characters, he does his eyebrow, and he does the Marlon Brando impression, which is good, you know. But it's always kind of weird because it's just like those audition tapes are just them sitting in front of a empty studio full of people, and people are kind of laughing and stuff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Saturday Night Show. The show is live. The show is not on tape. So all the mistakes that you... All the mistakes happening on this show are real. We don't plan anything, because everything is real.
Okay, Wally? All right.
With tape, we have the advantage of editing some things that don't work. With live television, anything goes on that you want on. Okay.
But what's really interesting, I thought about this tape, is that they finish the tape up,
mm-hmm.
and then you can kind of hear in the background somebody says, okay, let's bring Andy on.
Ah.
And apparently the person who auditioned after John Belushi was Andy Kaufman, which I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and Andy Kaufman sits there, and he recites the song MacArthur's Park, like totally straight.
Oh,
like,
you found like, that tape? No. You can find Andy Kaufman's audition tape?
Yeah, it's a link. I linked it. In the document. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's weird. I didn't know he'd audition for them like that. So it's crazy.
Yeah, we got to do an episode on all the famous people that auditioned and didn't make it on Saturday Night Live. I mean, it goes from everyone from
I just watched the Jim Carrey.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah. I was gonna say Jim Carrey, Colbert, Andy Kaufman. I mean, it goes on and on. Of course, Mark Maron, who talks about it in every episode of WTF.
Yeah, I think what's his name? Steve Carell, I think, auditioned for them too.
Yeah, I mean, everyone who was that used to be the show, and I think now
that was
the
it.
Show, you know, a lot of like top performers go to like, you know, Daily Show and, you know, other mm-hmm. shows that have kind of also filled that gap. But that was, you know, the show. If you were the cream of the crop, you would go to SNL.
Right.
Which I think that's a good place to kind of end this episode. And of course, when we end episodes, it's time to plug away. Scott, what do you have to plug?
I will keep plugging what I keep plugging all the time. Harmon and I have another podcast, kind of done sporadically, called This is the President, where we talk about all things presidential, which you can find everywhere you find your favorite podcast. But even plus that and above and beyond, we have a YouTube channel called, funnily enough, This is the President, which you can find at youtube.com/thisisthepresident, where we post videos about all funny things presidential. We just posted one about Reagan and the Christmas turkey just last week, so you can watch Reagan presenting a Thanksgiving turkey and trying to answer questions about Iran-Contra. So there you go. Everything you want to know about presidents up there on the YouTube for you, and also wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Here, here, here. And as always, if you like Comedy History 101, there's several options for you to take. Okay, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101, wherever you get your podcast, or on our website, comedyhistory101.com. Also, we are an independent podcast. No commercials, no Casper mattresses, no stamps.com, unless you're stamps.com and want to be one of our sponsors. So as an independent podcast with no commercials, take time to support Comedy History 101 on our Patreon site, which is patreon.com/CH101. Throw in a few dollars each month and we'll keep Comedy History 101 ad-free. Unless you are Casper mattresses.
I have a question. So what kind of special things do people get when they pledge to us in comedy on Patreon?
Perfectly good question, Scott. Well, we are soon going to be launching a variation of our podcast, This is the President, kind of like Comedy History of Politics of the Week, where you hear Scott and I carry on about what the hell has gone on in politics this very past week. So that will become a special feature for those who subscribe on Patreon. And we will be
great.
Yes, great indeed. And we will be back next week with part two of our history of John Belushi, talking about his SNL years, which led to the movie Animal House, and of course, the forming of the Blues Brothers.
And he's hanging out with the guys from Fear with, what's his
Lee
name?
Vang.
Lee Vang.
No, but
yeah.
Also, he was hanging out with the Dead Boys, and there's a clip in the Showtime documentary of him playing drums with the Dead Boys.
All right, yeah. Like he was in the Ravens. There you go, tied it back.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah. So anyways, that's what's coming up. Thanks a lot for tuning in, and bye-bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.